Hello, my fine friends. Welcome back to Destination Discourse. I'm your host, Stuart Butler, joined today with the one and only Adam Stoker. How are you, sir?
You know what? I'm great. I got to spend a weekend with my wife for our 18th anniversary in Phoenix. We went to the Morgan Wallen concert and just had a heck of a time. Got back late last night, a little tired, but totally worth it.
That's neat, man. If I asked her, would she say she's doing great because she got to spend a week with you, or she'd be like, man, today's a better day than last week because I had to spend a week with Adam.
Listen, I think it has a lot more to do with her love of Morgan Wallen than it does her love of me. That's why we went. She loves Morgan Wallen a lot. And that,
no doubt.
You know, in order to get her to spend a weekend with me, Morgan has to be there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I'm not sure I can directly relate, but I understand for sure. So I'm going to tell you and the audience today, I'm going to give myself a get out of jail free card. Apparently COVID is still a thing. It hit me like a ton of bricks last week. So I'm back on the saddle, but I am not at full force today. I feel like I'm at like, I got that brain. Have you had COVID, Adam? It's like you get a brain fog afterwards. And it's like your brain, I'm getting distracted easily or just sort of losing my train of thought. And so,
you know, I kind of liked it when I got COVID because I got to kind of feel what everyone else feels like because it brought me down. You know what I mean?
You just stole my joke. I was about to say I'm operating like 40% today, so I feel like I'm probably on Adam's level, but we'll see how it goes. But
I had to preempt it.
You did. You stole my joke. It's fine. It's all good. And we have a guest with us today. So I'm going to give you the opportunity because I, with my COVID brain, Rebecca, I don't want to mess it up. So Rebecca, welcome to the show. Tell us, our audience, who you are and why the hell you're on this show today.
Thanks. My name is Rebecca Wormleighton. Thank you very much for having me. I am co-founder at Zendelity. I saw one of your podcasts and I was really interested in having a chat with you gentlemen. I have spent my career on the data side, customer experience side, hospitality, supporting those side. And I wanted to bring to light some of my views on where I think we should be prioritizing our time from a hotel perspective as we move post-COVID pandemic.
That's awesome.
Dealing with that.
Well, thank you. And this is, I mean, this is the first time we've met, first time we've actually had a conversation. We traded emails. So the audience is in for a treat today. Like, we don't know really where this conversation is going to go. And that's the great thing about this show. We're going to have some dialogue, some discourse. We're going to ask some really stupid questions. And you're going to have some really smart, insightful answers. So we're excited to do that. And it's going to be focused around the customer experience. And from a destination marketing organization perspective, what our role could potentially be moving forward in that arena. But before we jump into the topic at hand, it's that time that Rebecca's been waiting for, our audience has been waiting for. It is time. Adam, are you ready? It's Stu's.
Gonna tell you what you need. It's
Stu. Oh, yeah.
How you like the jingle, Rebecca?
It's good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to be crazy not to like this.
You know, Adam, we haven't recorded in probably, you know, I had COVID, so we skipped last week. The week before, we did like a shorter episode for 4th of July. I was at DI conference, which was great, by the way. I got to tell you, I didn't miss the jingle in that time off. I didn't miss it one bit, but there it is. So,
well,
Adam,
and I think that's your COVID brain, right? Like it's hurt your ability to like good things, including the jingle. But I do want the audience to know, I feel bad about last week. And I also have a little confusion because I used Google VO3 to make a couple of videos from both you and I about why we weren't recording last week, and you chose not to run them. And I was disappointed in that because I felt like, for one, we really captured the essence of your accent in those videos, and I thought VO3 did a great job
capturing
that.
Are you going to play them now? Is this?
I don't know. I mean, I was vetoed before, so I don't know. Do I have the ability to play those now?
Well, you kind of put me on the spot now. Like, you kind of put me in a corner that I can't really say no, right? But I gotta say that you did one with an American accent for me and you did one with an English accent for me, and I feel like what you didn't do was find the perfect hybrid that sounds Australian, which is,
you know,
then I would have
that's
probably
a good point. That's
with
a miss on my end, for sure. Should we play your apology video?
Do you have it lined up?
I do. I've got it pulled up.
I want to hear it now.
So everybody see, here's our
if you're watching on YouTube, there's an AI avatar of me. I don't even remember when this actual video of me
I found
was
this
taken,
on Google Images. So
so it was a photo of me looking
it's
goofy.
It's a photo of you. Okay. Here we go.
Hello, Desties. Okay. So unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to release an episode of Destination Discourse this week because, well, I have COVID.
So you only get 8 seconds on Google VO3. And if anybody's ever wondered, and I think this is important, if anybody's ever wondered what Stuart would sound like with, I guess I'll call it a normal
proper English accent.
Yeah, here's what you get.
Hey, Desties, it's Stuart from Destination Discord. Unfortunately, I've tested it for COVID, so there won't be a new podcast episode this week. I'm going to chug a cool milk awards at it from Vancast after this weekend.
By the way, I don't know if you noticed, but for some reason, none of that was English for the last like 4 seconds of clip. And it was great.
It was gibberish, but to be fair, it sounded more coherent than I feel like I'm being today. So. Thank you for that, Adam. Thank you for the power of AI. Do you want to do your shameless plug now? What was Stu's news? Because I am allowing you to do a shameless plug.
Yeah, so for those that are listening and have been following along, I've kind of kept everybody updated on Tourism IQ. It's a platform that I've built for us to kind of build some community together as an industry, and you can see it on mytourismiq.com. But we actually launched it last year during DI's annual convention, and it was really great. We built it in WordPress, and it was a great start. But what we found as we continued to gain users is that it wasn't scalable the way it needed to be in order to accommodate the volume of traffic that we were getting, which is good because it's a good problem to have because it means we were getting a lot of people to the site. But the bad part was it was getting slower and slower and slower. So generation 2 of Tourism IQ just launched. The site was actually down on Saturday and Sunday over the weekend. And then we launched generation 2 today. And I got to say, I'm really proud of how it turned out. And I would love for our audience, if they're willing, to go check it out and use it and give me any feedback that you see, because we can see that everything's working pretty well, but of course there's going to be bugs and issues. And if you guys can help me find those issues, we'll clean them up and continue to optimize the site so that we can build this digital platform for the industry, and really, really excited about it.
Well, good, Adam. I will bless you with my presence there shortly. And I might even add another post. It's been quite a while since I've added one, but
you know what, the newly appointed czar of Visit Myrtle Beach, I'm really grateful that you would grace us with your presence there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll charge like a modest fee too. Like it won't be anything outrageous like I would normally charge you to do it. So, yeah.
I thought I was going to get more of a reaction there. I was instructed by a mutual friend of ours to call you the czar.
I know exactly who it is because he already texted me today with the same verbiage. So and it was coming. I respond to czar, president, prime minister, any of those, you know, your royal
just
highness.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, you can call me whatever you want. But hey, Adam, let's shift gears. Let's jump in. We're being rude hosts. Let's let our guest here, Rebecca, have a little bit to contribute to the conversation. So we're talking about guest experience. I know you've primarily focused on the hotel side, Rebecca, and you know, keep in mind our audience here primarily destinations. And I grew up in the hotel space. I worked a lot directly with hotels in my agency world. And you know, we talked a lot about the best first marketing dollars you should always spend are in guest experience. Because without the guest experience, you're not going to be out of market, right? You can only marketing only shines a light on the guest experience. And so I think there's a disconnect between destinations because we don't control the product. We don't necessarily control the experience, but I think it's something we're trying to figure out how to do a better job of that. So I'd love for you to start with a bit of a preamble, Rebecca, and just talk to us a little bit about, you know, what you're seeing in the market. Are there any trends you're seeing and why guest experience and that focus on getting those 5-star reviews for a hotel or for a destination is so important?
Sure, absolutely. So I think where I would start is, so I actually started my career on the customer experience side, but just call center technology. And, you know, it's really gotten me thinking when I look at, you know, our call center organizations, very much focused on that digital experience when it comes to our guests, very much recognized by organizations about the importance of a guest experience and, or that digital experience. But when we look at hotels and the way we're managing our operations and our frontline teams who are really, you know, they have a they're the first line of contact for our guests, the way we're managing them are on two completely different planes. You know, when you think of, we hire a new agent for to work in our call center, and we spend all kinds of dollars training them, giving them technology. We record every one of their phone calls. We listen to everything that they do to ensure that they get it right. But yet, when an employee, a frontline employee, starts, whether it be at a hotel or you know, whatever facility, you know, we're handing them some checklists and some spreadsheets to say, here, go and do your job. But we have no visibility of what's going on for those individuals throughout the day. And so we're having to pay for inspections of inspections and the like. So that's where, you know, I believe that that looking at that guest experience and those frontline employees and getting a better handle on what they're doing is of significant importance moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes you make a good point. I think one of the things I've always struggled with is the disconnect between the digital experience and the physical experience. And even, you know, back in the day, I used to do a podcast with my previous agency called the Fuel Hotel Marketing Podcast. And our most popular episode we ever did was one that we said, which was, what if your call center behaved like your website? And it was ridiculous because we actually role-played different scenarios, but we were pointing out the disconnect. Like if you go to a website, a hotel website specifically, a lot of them you'll have an experience on the website, and then you'll go to book, especially if it's an independent hotel, and it's a completely different experience than the than you had up until that point. And it would be like calling a call center and someone having a great conversation, but then when you want to transact, they're actually transferring you to someone that didn't remember anything that you just talked about. And so that disconnect of treating a human like a human, regardless of the touch point, I think is something that we've always tried to focus on here at Myrtle Beach. But it gets harder because, again, we don't control the experience. We don't control the hotel's experience. So we can teach people about the destination. We have our own call center that people can interact with us. But then when they actually make the transaction decision, we're somewhat blind to that experience. So do you have any advice to destinations in terms of how they could mitigate that, or how maybe they can engage with their constituents, their stakeholders, their hotel partners to actually close that gap, that the discrepancy between the experiences?
I think that the challenge is, you know, we organizations I see putting a lot of money towards the guest experience, guest messaging technology in an attempt to mitigate that, but it's mm-hmm. still leaving that gap between what are the actual employees doing between, you know, once they're on site and that experience. And I think that, you know, I was talking to a client once, and just as a funny example, but you know, they had to do some maintenance for their facility. They went into the mechanical room to go make sure that everything was performing properly, HVAC machine was running at par, and they filled a spreadsheet or a piece of paper and a binder. And I said to them, I said, great, what are you going to do with that information afterwards? And they kind of laughed, right? Well, we don't look at it until somebody complains, and then we have to go and find it. So I think that, you know, some of the best things that we can start to do is really making sure we've got visibility as to what's actually happening, so that we can stop issues before they negatively impact customers, and we know about them, right? Rather than being reactive all the time and waiting till we get a bad review or, you know, something bad's happened, let's, you know, try and get ahead of the problem and make sure we know what's going on day in, day out.
Yeah, I mean, what we're getting into is essentially a brand discussion, right? Where some people believe that a brand is just the messaging that you put out to the universe or a couple other different things. But the reality is, a brand is the sum of all the interactions that your organization has with the outside world. For a destination, that gets really complicated because destinations don't control all of the touch points. And so what Stuart is referring to, when let's say somebody has a poor experience in the lobby of a hotel and they tie that back to the destination brand, the destination can do all the messaging it wants. It can do all the training that it wants. It can do all the different things to build its brand. But then there's that disconnect in the destination that can take place. And so I kind of feel like I agree with the idea that we need to have a good mechanism in place to evaluate our customer experience and action on improving it. The question is, how much control does the destination have? How much control should the destination have? And how do you work with your stakeholders to make sure the connection is as close as it can be?
Right. And the only way that we can do that and really answer those questions, in my mind, it all starts with getting access to the data. Right. I think right now, when we look at trying to manage it, it's a lot of, you know, he said, she said, type of scenario, right? So we've got no way of, you know, and then defining what are those standards, to your point, right? And actually having a clear expectation as to, you know, this is who we want to be, and we all need to rally behind that, because I think you're right. If I have a different experience, I'm dissing the whole thing.
Yeah.
Not just mm-hmm. one.
Well, Rebecca, when you say get access to the data, what specific data do you track to evaluate customer experience? And let me give you an example. I was chatting with some guys that were trying to build a tech platform for the DMO space at one point in time. And what they were trying to do is aggregate all the different Google reviews, TripAdvisor reviews, Yelp reviews, and everything into a platform that made it really easy to kind of see the score of each stakeholder within the destination and the destination score overall. And the cool thing was, is if you look at it in aggregate, you can say, okay, the sum of all of our touch points essentially is our review score. And then we can identify which stakeholders are, you know, not pulling their weight and need to improve their customer experience. And so the destination knows where to prioritize their actions. I think the reason it ultimately fell apart is because it was kind of like, well, this is one more platform to measure something we still don't have the ability to truly control. And so it was very difficult for them to get buy-in from destinations. I don't know if the product ever came to market. I kind of lost touch with the guys that were creating it. But how do we find what data to track? How do we gather the data that we need to track? And then how do you look at it in aggregate?
Well, I think the data, so even in that scenario, in my mind, that is still reactive, right? So we're making decisions based on, you know, whatever somebody has done a review on. And so from my perspective, it's getting even further ahead and looking at our employees and what they're actually doing as part of their day-to-day responsibilities, because it's that information, whether it's looking at, you know, is my HVAC machine performing? And if it's not, the faster we can identify that data, then we can make sure the room's not cold, which makes sure that we don't get the bad review online, right? So from my mind, it's the one area of our business that we're not really looking about, and that what's our employees doing throughout the day. If we could get handle on that data across all of our various departments and kind of have the metrics, we've invested all kinds of money in defining our operating procedures, whether they be from the franchisor or whether they be from our own general standards. So there's all kinds of data that is being captured, but nobody's looking at it, or they're looking at it in silos. So food and beverage is maybe looking at what they're doing from a health and safety perspective and food quality perspective, and maintenance is looking at those. But it's when we bring all of that information, that foundational operational data together, we have an opportunity to identify risks of poor performance and get ahead of it before it drives those reviews.
So, you know, obviously we know, we've seen the, and you probably know these, the data better than I do, but I know Cornell did the study several years ago and then redid it again, that sort of correlated the quality of the experience with the ADR and ultimately the RevPAR, right? So we intuitively know that the better the experience, the more profitable your business can be, right? I think that's well established and accepted. I think where it becomes a challenge for us as a DMO, who has stakeholders, the businesses that you're referring to that have the employees, like there's not a DMO that I'm aware of that really wants to, has the time, capacity, or the inclination to want to get into the business of running the businesses of the stakeholders, right? We're not managing their employees. I think where there may be opportunity is, and I've seen some destinations do this, is through training and certification programs. And, you know, we've said on the show several times, if you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome. And are there incentives that we can set up and benchmarks we can create? And maybe that's in the form of certifications, but are there things we can do to offer and create incentives for businesses to do the right thing? You know, and there's not really business out there that aren't trying to do the right thing. But again, it's comes down to incentives, but also focus. Like where is my business focus? So if you were to sort of, from a 30,000 foot view, looking at it from the destination's perspective, if there were two or three areas that we as DMOs could incentivize certain behaviors within our hotels, restaurants, attractions, are there specific levers that we should focus on first to see if this has an impact? So what I'm really saying is, what can I do or incentivize with my stakeholders to have the biggest impact on the guest experience?
Absolutely. So some of the stats that I've been reading recently, for example, 66% of guests now expect more frequent and better cleaning and sanitization, right? So if you look at, you know, health and safety as an easy example, where, mm-hmm. you know, if we can ensure that those standards are actually being adhered to on a regular basis, because if they're being adhered to, then we're not going to have those negative actions. Right. So I think that there's basic standard operating procedures, or if you used, you know, the Forbes, you know, Forbes has got 900 inspections that are done, or CAA and or AAA, you know, have all of these inspections that are required in order to maintain your status. Why? Because mm-hmm. if you don't get it, then, you know, they don't want them as part of it. But so if we can create those standards around the operating procedures and then find a way, not necessarily, you don't want to measure there every day, but if there was a way for you to have visibility to say, you know, this facility isn't maintaining its standards, you know, or if you maintain them up to a certain level, then you get, you know, certain additional incentives, additional marketing dollars or the like.
Yeah. So I think I'm understanding your premise, and now I want to make the connection specifically to the destination marketing space, right? Because if I'm understanding you correctly, your premise is there's so much data that you can gather on the front end to predict what the client experience is going to be like, right? And I'm going to go back to McDonald's as an analogy here, because their ice cream machines are rarely working. And there's even a map or an application or something out there to help people know which McDonald's machines are working and which ones okay. are not, right? And you can actually calculate how much uptime there is on McDonald's ice cream machines and everything. The whole reason I say that is, you know, that experience of the ice cream machine not working is always a detriment to the people that are going to try to grab a McFlurry or something like that on the way home from work. So that's one possible negative experience, right? Is that you've got maybe an ice cream machine is down. The metric that you would use to proactively calculate is, what is our percentage of uptime on the McDonald's ice cream machine that's in the market? And based on that percentage of uptime, I can predict how many negative experiences are going to come from the ice cream machine not working, right? I'm using that as a very kind of simplified example, but the idea is, in aggregate across the entire destination, there's all these different pieces of data that could be collected that can proactively predict the quality of the experience in the destination. My question that I have is, as a DMO who doesn't control the experience within the individual McDonald's and can't influence whether or not that ice cream machine is up and running, how can the DMO truly proactively evaluate what the customer experience is going to be like without having to run damage control after the fact? Because I have a hard time understanding how they're going to proactively collect the type of data that you're suggesting is going to give you the visibility you need.
So I guess when you look at and that's part of the premise that we are looking at as an organization is that it's time to change the way we're managing the front lines. And if we don't look at alternatives, then there's going to continue to be a missed opportunity for doing that, right? So I'll give you another example that I see is, going back to your ice cream machine. So one easy way that you could do that could be to put an IoT sensor, as an example, on the machine that checks for abnormal vibrations or normal heating, right? So that could give you that can give you that idea that something is going to go wrong and it's not going to execute. The challenge that I see with the IoT side of things, but it still comes down to execution. If somebody will then take that data and close the loop on it, then we shouldn't have bought the IoT devices in the center. So
Who's going to monitor that and action on it and everything?
and making sure that the job is actually getting done.
And that leads me to Stuart, because Stuart, you're obviously in a DMO, and Rebecca and I both are somewhat serving the industry outside looking in. So for you, as you're hearing the premise that we need to be monitoring, we're monitoring the wrong data because the data that we get is after the fact, and there's not much control other than impacting future experiences. What data can you at Visit Myrtle Beach proactively look at to predict the quality of the experience? And what tweaks can you make ahead of time before somebody arrives?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's virtually zero right now, right? Because we don't have that. That's not the relationship or the premise of the relationship we have with our stakeholders right now. Like, there isn't a social contract between us and, say, a hotel that we're in any way responsible for the guest experience in the current paradigm. And I'm speaking for Myrtle Beach, right? There may be destinations out there. I certainly know there are destinations that have done certification programs and things like that. But I'm scratching my head a little bit. Like, I love it in theory. I think philosophically I'm 100% aligned. I just think in practicality, it scares me a lot. It scares the crap out of me trying to think about how would we go about implementing a destination-wide methodology to collect this data, because our stakeholders, one, don't want us in their business, two, are fragmented in how sophisticated they are and what technologies they use to even begin to centralize that in a proactive lead indicator, especially. Like, I think the lag indicators are a little easier, right? Because we can do surveys and we can monitor scores and things like that. But to get proactive, the only thing that comes to my mind right now is to get into certification programs, to actually get in the business of training staff and publishing best practices and incentivizing people to follow those best practices, whatever they may be, or to bring in an organization that does this training and somehow offer, a discounted cost or education programs to try to encourage our stakeholders to participate in this, to actually embrace it.
One of the things that jumps out of my head when you talk about, so there's the certification program that says, okay, these are the things that we have to do. But a funny example I was thinking about today, and I was in the restroom today, and there's a sign on the back of the stall that says, this is how you keep the stall clean. And so when I think about training and I think about, we can tell people until we're blue in the face how to do stuff. The fact that we have to tell people to keep the bathroom clean, it is, it's a level all on its own, right? But so I think sometimes the way we're looking at operations, even when, if it's just relying on training and certifications, is still going to fall short, right? Because as soon as somebody's back is turned, we don't know what's actually going on until, bad things happen.
Yeah, I think this is where, Stuart, I don't know that I want to jump to the solution of, okay, it's certification programs. I know you're offering that as an option, but I think the exploration that I think we should do is, well, what are metrics that the DMO can track to predict the experience, right? So for example, what percentage of staffing capacity is each hotel at any given time? And can we, is that a metric that we can collect And can we use that to correlate with maybe some of the review data that comes after the fact and say, okay, well, we're seeing a correlation between when the hotel's at 80% staffing and the reviews are 3.5 stars versus when they're at 95%, they're at 4 stars, right? And obviously this is a rudimentary example here, but are there other metrics like that throughout the destination that we can start to identify, not to have the destination go fix those, because I don't think that's going to happen, but the destination from an expectation setting perspective can message accordingly. So if, and I'm going to go back to that same metric, right? Like, let's say that a hotel is at 80% staffing levels. Maybe our messaging needs to be a little bit more centered around, like, they get 3 emails after they book their trip saying, please be patient with our staff. Our staff has done a great job of preparing for your stay, but they're stretched a little thin, and here's what your expectations should be going in, right? Like, I wonder if there's metrics like that globally in a destination that we can identify to help us set expectations better, resulting in a better experience for the end user.
Yeah, I certainly think it's possible. I don't know what they are off the top of my head. I would want to spend some time, and I probably will now because this is an interesting conversation, understanding, you know, Rebecca already mentioned the room cleanliness in the hotel, right? That's obviously a metric that is going to determine the outcome. I think if you look at something like restaurants, like wait times, quality of the food, you know, things like that are going to have an impact. Friendliness of staff. I don't know how you would quantify some of that, but I think if we can triangulate what are the levers, right? What are the things that consumers care about the most, or what are the triggers that are most likely to create a negative experience and zero in on them? Like, I'll give you an example. So, you know, we use a platform called Flip2. Yeah. And it's great because after the stay, it's a lag indicator, but after the stay, we sort of ask a net promoter score type of question. And we ask people to sort of rate their experience from 0 to 10 or 1 to 5, whatever it is. And if they give us like a 4 or 5, we'll ask them to tell us about the most memorable experience they had and submit a photo. And we get some phenomenal, what we call stories from our consumers. They'll write a little something, they'll submit a photo. We use that to help promote the destination. But if they're lower than that, you know, if they're like a 2 or 1, 2 or 3, we'll ask them, well, what was it that was the concern? And one of the things we identified as a major contributing factor, there was a one-to-one correlation with the wait time and the check-in experience and the overall stay experience. Like, what we found is when people have been driving for 6-7 hours to come to Myrtle Beach with their kids who are probably a little antsy and their spouse who's probably a little grumpy and tired and having to deal with the kids that whole time, when you come to check in, if you have a good check-in experience, it's efficient and friendly, it sets the tone for the whole stay. Your whole week, for a lot of people, is determined based on your check-in experience. And that's data that we were able to identify and share with some of our stakeholders. And then our stakeholders doubled down on making sure they were very accommodating. Not that they weren't trying to be accommodating before on the check-in experience, but it showed the importance of that check-in experience. So they doubled down on their efforts to make sure that was efficient, maybe offered new processes, like giving people the option to check in from their car versus come in and stuff like that. So, you know, those are the kind of insights that I think as a DMO, we could, you know, because we're seen as an authority in our destination, right? We have influence over our stakeholders, even if we don't have authority over them, we do have influence. So if we can identify, and maybe it's in conjunction with a hospitality association, if you have a hospitality association, because sometimes they're more into like workforce and some of the things you're talking about. But if we can identify like the 4 or 5 or 6 things, the big levers, the reason that people have negative experience, and then we can find a metric to measure that, and then we can find a way to influence that and measure it over time, I think that would be an appropriate approach for a DMO, if that makes sense.
I think one of the areas which would be interesting to start is, so if you go and look at TripAdvisor and it's the subcategories that they rate on, you know, that might be an interesting, you know, tying back to those, right? Because if you think of a bad experience, so it's going to be, yes, my wait times, or if the services that I've paid for as part of this destination are not up and running, the pool is broken, or the, you know, the something or other is broken across the facilities, having that kind of general visibility could help, you know, escalator or grow your response.
I'm kind of caught up in this expectation setting concept, and can we proactively set expectations a little bit better? Another example, Stuart, of, you know, a possible lever to pull is restaurant wait times. So every destination has like those 10 restaurants that just get 80% of the business, and I'm obviously overstating it. I think 80% is too high. But what if we could proactively understand the times of day that those wait times are going to be higher, or the time of year that those wait times are going to be higher, and proactively message them to try a couple of off the beaten path restaurants that might not get the same fanfare, but have the same kind of dining experience and high quality food? Or, you know, maybe there's, I went to the Children's Museum in Myrtle Beach, Stuart, when I was there. And, you know, maybe the Children's Museum is super busy, so we're going to proactively send families an email saying that maybe they ought to try the museum or something like that. Like, and I said museum, I meant aquarium or something like that. So is there a way we can do a better job of setting expectations by proactively managing some of those key metrics that hurt a customer experience?
Yeah. So I agree. So, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, but you where you say is the brand is the sum of the touch points. What I've said before is it's the difference between the expectation and the experience and the sum of that, right? And so I do think people can be influenced and their experience can be impacted by setting expectations. Like an example of that is we have a hotel group here locally that have, you know, a what I would say an economic, an economy level property, right? It's a no frills experience, but for a while they were promoting it as not luxurious, but they were probably shooting above their weight class a little bit, right? Punching above their weight class a little bit in terms of how they promoted the property. You know, the types of words they were using were probably a little hyperbolic,
a little aggressive,
right? The most aggressive version of the truth is what they were probably saying, and they were getting killed on social media and on TripAdvisor because people would go there with a certain level of expectations. But people would always say the value was good, right? It was a low cost economy property, so they started. We advised them change your verbiage on your website, you know, and start to say this is a no frills, you know, basic accommodation, but it's a great location. We're really close to this and this. You're going to have clean rooms, and they're cozy rooms, but then maybe smaller than you're used to. The staff are going to be friendly, but we don't maybe have the water features that you're used to in a high-end resort in Myrtle Beach. But they started being honest about who they were and what their value proposition was. And, you know, nothing's changed with the actual quality of the experience, but people's reviews started changing because now they were showing up with a tempered expectation. So I certainly think we can have an impact on that. But again, it comes down to what is it that the consumer cares about? If we're going to be obsessed with the customer, what is it they care about? Okay, we know they care about cleanliness. We know they can't care about friendly stuff. We know they care about wait times.
Well, not only what do they care about, but what can you proactively measure, right? Because cleanliness is actually a really difficult thing to measure ahead of time, because when you show up in the room, it's either clean or it's not, right? But what are the things that we can actually see data ahead of time that's going to help us predict what that experience is going to be like so we can set expectations correctly?
Yeah, but I think something like cleanliness, the past dictates the future unless you change protocols, right? So I think you can do surveys of what people's rankings, reviews are of cleanliness over time, and that is an indicator of what it's going to be in the future unless you make a change, right? So if you're consistently hearing rooms weren't clean, you got a problem. You're not going to change that by setting expectations. You're only going to change that by cleaning the rooms better, right?
Yes, I think this goes back a little bit to Rebecca's original premise, though, because what you're suggesting then is you need a mixture of those proactive metrics and lagging metrics in order to truly calculate what you need to make a change.
Yeah, I think one of the best ways of predicting the future is to look at the past, right? And I think that's always been the case. And so unless something physically changes, history is likely to repeat itself. And so I think you got to look at some lag metrics in order to predict the future. More importantly, you got to look at lag metrics to also measure the impact that you've had from any kind of proactive measure as well.
Yeah. Rebecca, your reaction to all that?
I was thinking about a few things. So one, it was funny. I was looking on TripAdvisor and at the same exact same hotel in, they're getting really great reviews and then they're getting very negative reviews. And the question that jumps out at me is, so, one was super clean and the other was not so clean. And to me, it's probably more, it's taking going a level deeper and not stopping at the whether or not it's clean, but it's, who was actually involved in doing that work and where does the training need to be done, right? So, for example, if I'm just getting complaints from my weekend staff versus getting complaints from, from guests that are staying during the week potentially, can we identify where the fundamental issue lies, right?
Right.
We have to have our standard operating procedures, but different interpretations of that is where we fall out of line. I was talking to the U.S. Coast Guard, and we were talking about how a ship will pull into one port. They always pulls into the same port, and for whatever reason, maybe the ship gets transferred to another port. In theory, the exact same standard operating procedures for the inspections. Yet in one port they're passing and in the other port they're failing, right? Mm-hmm. So it's the interpretation of those operating procedures, of those expectations, where sometimes, is maybe where we really have that shortfall where we're falling down because there's not, because the way we're managing it, right? Because we're giving, Sally a piece of paper that says, go and do these things and check it off. And their interpretation of what line item 22 really means or what, how we measure success or failure is going to be different. So it's trying to take away all of those individual interpretations, I think, that where we get to so that we're managing and measuring success on a consistent model.
Yeah. We used to, when I was on the hotel side and we'd help some of our hotels with post-stay surveys, we'd always try to isolate variables, right? And so an individual, a person is a variable. So we'd always try to track who was it that checked the person in. We'd always try to track who was the person that cleaned the room and who was the supervisor on duty at that time that the room was cleaned. So we'd ask questions to an individual, knowing which room they stayed in, who checked them in, because that's in the system, and then we could cross tab it. And so you're exactly right. What we find sometimes is, we notice a pattern of unclean rooms or a spike in unclean rooms, and then you could cross tab correlate that with who the individuals were, and you'd often find that it was a human element was the variable that we needed to isolate because either they weren't trained properly or they didn't. They weren't supervised properly, but it was usually down to an individual versus a systemic, or systematic failure.
But I think you bring up, I think you're absolutely right. It's that human factor. And I think that when we are, when you think of operations, it's the only part of the business where we rely on inspections of inspections, right? So we've got to send the manager up is going to someone's gone in and clean the rooms. And now manager's got to go and inspect their work to make sure it's up to standards. You don't have that anywhere else in the business, right? And whether it's marketing or sales or development or all of the different parts of the business, they're measured down so proactively. You can see anytime somebody hits a keyboard. But from an operational perspective, our manager, instead of focusing their time and attention on elevating the quality of service, they're running around after their staff inspecting their work to make sure that they did their work, right? There's got to be a better way to do this. And the work of these people, you know, worst case is that it results in a negative customer experience. You know, best case of the worst case, worst case, somebody gets hurt. There's damages to the property. There's because people didn't do their job. And it's not because people are necessarily are bad. But, you know, what happens when no one's watching is you know, where it falls down.
Yeah, and it's increasingly a challenge for us as a destination because we're so far removed from the individual, right? We have no visibility or any kind of control over the individuals that are working for our constituents. So, you know, it's a challenge. I don't know that it's one that we've necessarily solved today. I think what we've done is we posed some interesting, intriguing questions and some avenues for destinations to sort of start evaluating and thinking about. I think I'm going to leave this conversation thinking a little bit more about what are some of those metrics we can and should be measuring, and then what are some of those levers that we maybe could be influencing, even if we can't control them, but are there things we can be doing from an education, a training, a certification program that influence the experience? Are there things we can be doing to set the expectations for the experience? Because I do think at the end of the day, even though it's really hard and I sort of my 40% operating brain is struggling a little bit to think through this, I do know and I'm very confident in the belief that the quality of the experience will directly impact our performance, right? As a DMO, I think the quality of the experience will not just impact whether or not someone's going to come back. And we know that our best next guest is our previous guest in all of hospitality. If we can get someone to have a great experience, significantly more likely to come back, right? But more importantly, I think, or maybe just as importantly, is that word of mouth. You know, regardless of how good we do promoting our destination, if the experience is bad and the family that just came from Columbus, Ohio to Myrtle Beach goes back and tells all their families and friends, yeah, it was okay. I didn't really love it. The wait times were long and the room was kind of dirty. That it doesn't matter how much advertising we do. If that word of mouth is happening, we know it's going to have a bigger influence than anything we can do from a media perspective. So we're very much incentivized to solve this problem. I just don't know that we have yet. So yeah. I definitely appreciate the conversation. Adam, you have something to add to that?
No, I think it's interesting. I think it's incumbent on every destination to identify what are we do such a good job, actually, I think, with lagging indicators. What happened during the visit and how can we use historical data to be better next time? The thing that I don't think is currently happening, especially at scale in a destination, is tracking what metrics. For example, what percentage of uptime does the ice cream machine have, and correlating that with how people's experiences feel to them. I think those are some of the things I think destinations could do much better. I'm not suggesting that destinations have the ability to control the organizations within the destination, because I think that's a little bit of a pipe dream, or maybe even something destinations don't want to be involved in. But I do think it can help us set expectations. So how can we use proactive data collection to set effective expectations for our visitors? That's the question I would be asking as a destination marketer listening to this episode.
Yeah, and how can we be a thought leader in our community to make sure we're not the only ones having these conversations, that our members, our investors, our stakeholders are also thinking about this stuff? Because I do think one of our roles, although not every destination would look at it this way, but I think, again, some would probably lean on the Hospitality Association and the market to do this. But I believe one of our roles is to help to improve the quality of the businesses in our destination, right? And so this was just one dimension of that. I mean, obviously things like workforce are things that we sort of have historically had a vested interest in, but I don't know if we've ever looked at it from we need to do this because it impacts the customer's experience. I think we've looked at it from, hey, our members are struggling to fill their jobs. We need to help our members, right? And so I've always been a big fan of being obsessed with the customer And a lot of folks would say, well, our customer is our business, our stakeholders, right? I still think ultimately we serve our businesses better if we focus on the visitor being the customer. And obviously we could also argue that our residents are also our customer, right? But I think ultimately we serve our resident the best, we serve our businesses the best if we make sure that the customer's having a good experience. And that's up into and including, I'll double click on something Adam said earlier, is dispersing people throughout the community or maybe at different times of year, you know? So an example there would be Myrtle Beach spent a lot of time over the last couple of decades trying to go from a, you know, summer destination, like a Memorial Day to Labor Day destination, to a year-round destination. We brought in key events like the Myrtle Beach Classic in May and CCMF at the beginning of June. We brought in a lot of sports facilities, like baseball fields and a sports center. And now we're bringing in sports and groups and meetings throughout the year. And now I'd say we're comfortably a 10 or 11 month destination versus a 3 or 4 month destination. And so that obviously has an impact on the experience, guest experience. Someone coming in maybe September when the weather's great, the prices are a little less, the restaurants are a little less crowded, could potentially have a better experience than someone coming in July when it's packed, right? The businesses obviously appreciate it because now they've got business year round, and then the residents benefit from that because one, there's more jobs year round, but two, the businesses are open year round, which maybe restaurants were closing before, and ultimately our economy is thriving. So I think we're already doing some of that stuff, but maybe we're approaching it from a different direction than this conversation was today. So I appreciate it. You got us thinking. This is good.
Good. You know, and I would add one final thought around that. You know, we talked about the Cornell study at the beginning when, a 1 point improvement can drive an 11.2% increase in your ADR while maintaining the same occupancy. And I think that putting a challenge out to your members and combined, if everybody as a whole destination, if we can increase our ratings, it's ultimately going to help all of us drive a higher ADR and the like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. I never really thought about that before, but you know, we talked to individual stakeholders about their individual review scores, but we've never really done a team sport approach to saying, let's as a community all try to raise the bar.
Yeah,
that could be a really interesting local campaign that not only would yield to greater experiences, but could also help with our other mission, which is providing value to the tangible value that's seen within our community. So I could see us running sort of a campaign locally, which is a community pride campaign, trying to get people to focus on those things, because I do believe your focus determines your reality. And so if we are the ones that create that focal point, then maybe the community would rally behind it. And so that's a really cool insight. You got me thinking again now. So Rebecca, I appreciate you bringing this topic. Thank you for reaching out. We like conversations that we haven't had before, and we like conversations that, challenge us. You know, this is not an area that we really spent a lot of time talking about. So we appreciate it. Do you have any final thoughts or any sort of final takeaways for our audience?
Just looking at, I think that as organizations, people are people. I think that, you know, the old saying, if you have a negative experience, I'll tell 7 of my friends. I don't know what the current stats are with social media, but and if I have a good experience, I'm only telling 2 or 3. So making it a priority and from an operational excellence, I think it's within all of us. To your point, you know, your definition of excellence can change based on the type of facility or that you have. But I think striving for operational excellence is going to bring value to both your customers and then in turn your employees, because I think people want to be associated with excellence. And if your facility is lackluster, and not meeting expectations, you know, it drives employee morale down, which causes turnover, which and the like, right? So I think it's in everybody's best interest to strive for however you define operational excellence. and not waiting to not waiting for the negative reviews, and really focusing in on the here and now and what's going on with our people and our facilities.
And maybe there's a rallying cry. This would be something I'd love for you or others to come on the show and talk about maybe in another episode. But is there, instead of operational excellence, is there such a thing as destination excellence? Can that be something we strive towards as a collective community? You know, destination excellence could be could be that rallying cry. So we definitely appreciate it. Rebecca, if people want to reach out to you or learn more about what you guys do, where can they do that?
Absolutely. You can pop me an email at Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A, at Zendelity, Z-E-N-D-E-L-I-T-Y.com.
Yeah. And Adam, she's Canadian, so the Z is Z in your language, just so you know.
Oh, I appreciate the translation. I was going to use your actual AI bot to figure that out.
Yeah. Adam, any final thoughts? Where can they find you?
Yeah, I just, as you were talking, Stuart, you talked about dispersion strategy, and I've seen a lot of dispersion strategy. What I haven't seen is what I would call dynamic dispersion strategy, and that's where you use forward-looking data to decide your dispersion strategy, and I think that would be a really interesting market opportunity for somebody that wanted to tackle that, because dynamic dispersion could really benefit a lot of destinations around the world.
Yeah, I mean, one area could be restaurants, right? If you could partner with, you know, one of the big, like an OpenTable or someone like that, or Resy, you know, could you get indications on demand for reservations at restaurants? And then could you use that to sort of dynamically change which restaurants you're promoting for a given time? Like, there's definitely opportunities to do that. So that's cool. Adam, if they want to find you, where can they do that?
Well, you can find me on the newly released Gen 2 of Tourism IQ at mytourismiq.com. You can find me on LinkedIn or Adam at thebrandrevolt.com.
Thank you, Adam. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. If you want to continue this conversation, or you want to contribute something else to this conversation, or you have another topic, then please reach out to Adam or me. You can reach me, stuart.butler@visitmontalbeach.com, or you can hit me up on LinkedIn as well. Please leave a review. Please tell a friend, whether you like this show or you don't like this show, but you're still listening. Please tell a friend. We'd love to grow the
audience.
If you
don't like it, tell 7 people.
Yeah, that's right. I'd rather you told them, hey, there's this really, really bad show that you should totally listen to because it's awful. There's this Australian fella and this other guy that wears hats, and they talk nonsense for an hour every week. But please tell a friend about this show. I will say this, Adam, in closing, I just got back from Destinations International last week, or the week before last, and we have an audience. Like, I had several people, dozens of people that came up to me and commented on the show, most of which was positive, which was really good. I definitely met a few people that want to come on the show but haven't necessarily had the courage, but I'm going to nudge them to come on the show. And I even had 2 selfie requests. So we got some fans out there.
Wow. Holy cow.
Some fans out there in the destination. And so I can't wait to bring this show live to Esto in just a few weeks. If you guys haven't already signed up to go to Esto, Adam and I are going to be doing a session. We talked about this last episode, but we're going to have some swag there. I've seen the merch that's coming, and it's
really
pretty
good.
Legit. It's going to be a collector's item, maybe one of a kind. So if you interact with us during the session, it is going to be a very interactive session.
Well,
if you interact with us,
how about
you might get a piece of swag.
Anybody that sends us a question between now and Esto, I will personally see to it that they also get a shirt.
Oh, wow. Do they get to pick the shirt, or are you gonna select it?
It kind of depends on the numbers we have left.
All right. So ask a question. You can do that on LinkedIn. You can leave that in an Apple Podcast review or on an episode. You can leave a comment or a note in Spotify. So we'll check those, or you can shoot us an email. But Adam said it, man. You'll get some swag, some merch for Destination Discourse. You can be part of the Desti Nation and one of our best Desties. So we can't wait to see and hear that. So thank you for tuning in. Until next time, this has been Destination Discourse.
Thanks, everybody. you know, it's hard for me to say something stupid. I can only say really intelligent, condescending things.